Well, good afternoon. It's time for Boat Talk, Better Late Than Never, a live version. Boat Talk is a call-in show. We'll be giving that number a little bit later, but first we're going to start off with our usual boatyard report from John Johansson, who is calling in from the road on his way down to the Newport Boat Show. We'll be talking about that a little bit later. But hello, John, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, let's get things rolling.
Yeah, I'm at Mystic Seaport.
Oh, okay, yep.
Which is, well, see, you have to understand my real addiction. Well, first is boats, but second is books. And there's an incredible bookstore in Niantic. So every time I make the trek to the Newport Boat Show, my first stop is Niantic to the, it's called the Book Barn. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of good books there. But anyways, first place that we'll talk to about, and it always has an incredible amount of boatyard news, is Front Street Shipyard. I'm not sure how many of you knew Abide. She was in there last year and had a major, major overhaul. Well, she just came back probably in August and had her bottom redone. And she's back in the water. And the first week of September, her owners took her on her first cruise along the main coast. And their first port of call was Somme Sound. They were coming back. They were going to have just some minor things done. And then they're headed to Newport, Rhode Island. So I might be able to see them if they got done quick enough. And then they're headed to the Caribbean for the winter. Tango is a Nordhavn 76. And she was in and had her coach roof extended. And this is kind of interesting because I've heard this now a couple of times from J.B. Turner, who runs Front Street Shipyard, that they have a lot of high-end people looking for, there's a new battery system that's gone beyond the lithium ion batteries. So I'm going to try to see if I can find out more about that at Newport. I should have asked J.B., but anyway, so they've added those to her and to increase the batteries, their life, and keep them charged up. They're putting these solar panels on them. So it's going to be like the whole top of the house on those Nordhavns. And then another Nordhavn 76 is in there, and that's Trixie. And they're still doing some bottom work to her, basic maintenance. They're doing some windlass and repairing the air conditioning. Red Sky is a Swan 100, and she came in or is in now for a full paint job, top and bottom, before heading south for the winter. They've already unstepped her mast, and they probably early last week they hauled her out and got her ready for the paint booth. Here's one that was interesting, and it took me a while to find her new name, Sunny 3. Now that was built by Brooklyn Boatyard back in 2018. She's now called Sapphira. She's the 94 footer. I can't remember who she was built for. It was built for a guy in Newport, Rhode Island who told Steve White he really didn't need a boat. He needed a project. And, when he got the boat, I think he sailed it right to the Caribbean. But anyways, she's in and she's just having some, minor things done. Rudder's going to be hauled out. They're going to replace the bearings. They're going to change the bow pulpit system. Upgrade the anchors, add a windlass, that sort of stuff, and then just general maintenance. A 65 custom, this one's kind of interesting, a custom composite boat that was built in Thailand. Now, she's already had an upgraded battery system, and it's also the one that's gone beyond the lithium, but now they've gutted the main salon, the cabin, and the head. So basically, the boat's been stripped right out, and they're starting to rebuild her. And they're going to put these new solar panels on her top, and 90% of the power will come from the top of the solar panel, and 10% is reflected solar power that's coming from the bottom side. I thought that was interesting. Then she's going to be refaired and repainted. Lone Fox, I didn't find much history on her. We do know that she was built in the early 1950s, and I didn't have it in my database and stuff, but I'm going to start looking for more stuff on her. She's in there, and she is a composite boat. So she was built with steel frames, hull and deck, and then she was planked with teak. She needs a lot of rebuilding, and that's what she's in the process of getting. So they're replacing a lot of the deck beams and frames because they're basically rotted out, and some planking, not very much planking. They just finished a paint job on a 49-foot Whisper jet. But the big news there was Cangarder. Now, anybody who's been going around, especially if you go over the bridge, you can see this big black boat. And for the last 3 years, she's been covered with a winter tarp. And that's Cangarder. She was built in 1901 by Pussy and Jones on the Delaware River. And she spent most of her life up on the Great Lakes, and then she went to Rochester. And then I would bet in the 80s she came to New England, where she was brought by a guy out of Rockport, Massachusetts, who was told not to buy it. It promptly bankrupted him. She went to the Museum of Yachting, and then Bob Neal, who owned her previously, he spent I don't know how much in rebuilding this yacht, and she was gorgeous. Well, she's just been sold. He, of course, died a couple years ago, and I don't think the kids had any love for some of the things that he had a love for. So she's uncovered. They're getting her ready to be launched, and then they're going to load her onto a heavy lift vessel, and she's going to go across the Atlantic. Her new owner is from Istanbul, Turkey, and he's one of the largest collectors of steam engines, and she has her original steam engine, which I believe is a Gardner. There's a couple of new boats that they're doing. They can't tell me much on the 38-foot boat that they're building for the Navy, which is autonomous. And then they're going to start on a 42-foot Westmac walk-around pleasure boat. The hull's already there, and now they're starting to put a mold together for the deck. And she's going to be powered with a 1,300-horsepower man. Now, in Oceanville Boatworks, that's down in Sunrise, which is part of Stonington, in the shop is a 48-foot Muscle Ridge. They're finishing her off as a lobster boat for a fisherman from Booth Bay Harbor. And he's opted to have more of an interior than most people. He likes to cruise with his wife on weekends and stuff. They also own Atlantic Edge, which is one of the lobster buying plants on the east side of Booth Bay Harbor. And so she's not going to be done for another 5 months. They've started her about 2 months ago, mostly due to the fact that, you know, she's got a little more interior than most lobster boats do. She's going to be able to carry 28 crates of lobsters under her deck. She's got a 750-gallon fuel tank, and she's powered with a 1,000-horsepower man diesel. So she's going to come out in the spring or middle of winter. The boat they just finished, the Calvin Beal 44, that was a tuna boat. She went out of the shop probably early summer. She just came back because they had asked the owner to actually put in lifting rails on her, and he opted not to. Well, he's back to have the lifting rails put on her. This boat was really well appointed. It had a V-berth, hanging lockers, head with shower, and a very nice galley. She's powered with a 750 John Deere and cruises at 22 knots. Brian Reef over in Brooklyn is always one of the most fun places to go stop and see what's going on. He had a neat pocket pilot house cruiser that had been built on the West Coast. They thought in the 80s or 90s. Well, she came in with 36 broken frames, and they needed to replace those and some planking. They had some wire problems, and she needed an engine job. Well, she's got all of that done, but then they turned around and added 18 inches to the aft end of the pilot house. And so that's pretty much done. Then Brian is always doing some pretty far out design work. And he designed, I don't know how many years ago now, it's got to be at least three or four when I knew about it. And so probably before that, he designed this big power cat. Well, he's got a customer. Somebody in New Jersey is going to build one 55 feet in length. And she'll have a center console, be powered with twin 600 horsepower outboards with pod drives, and controlled by a joystick. So basically, he owns a sort of a resort. So at night, he called it booze cruises, and then in the morning, they can take people out water skiing and stuff like that. But she's not going to have very much on her. She's going to have a head built into the center console and a lot of seating, that sort of stuff. And she is Coast Guard certified because she's carrying passengers. They had an Alarion 26 in that had been built. It's a fiberglass one. had been built by a company in Rhode Island, and the balsa core decks, well, the balsa's no longer there. And you could smell it from a long way away that there was a problem. That's all been replaced. He's also upgraded it so it looked like a Hirschhoff design. Then there's a 6 meter out back that Brian's son Brandon is working on. She only needs a few things. He has a couple of three S boats, which were designed by Nathaniel Hirschhoff down in Bristol, Rhode Island. And he's looking for owners that would like to have one of those. Then I stopped at Yankee Marina in Yarmouth, and that's where Richard Stanley is currently residing. Over in Freeport, he had done some work on Merganza, which was a Will Frost design 34-footer that he built back in the late 1940s. So he did mostly cosmetic work on her. But he's moved back to Iroquois, which is a 60-foot Grebe. And she needs, he's working on the struts. And he actually straightened the struts out so they were equal on both sides, both fore and aft and side to side. But that made the strut off. So he needs one strut to have something added into it so that it equals the other one. Then he's going to start working on the interior, which is pretty complicated. They've got Stephen and Waring involved, who are a design group from Belfast. And so they're trying to help actually get some design so Richard has something to go from. Then they were thinking of actually covering the hull with a fiberglass cloth, which Richard's not totally in favor of. He thinks that they should just use a monourethane on it and paint it every 2 or 3 years, maybe even 4 years if you keep it up. But the other project that he's really got in the wings is a boat called Maddie Sue. Some people from Southwest Harbor might remember her. You might have to go way back. She was built for Francis Sperling back in the 30s. And I'm not sure how long she was around Southwest Harbor before she was sold. I think right now she's residing in Vermont. But she needs some work. Richard says she's not totally bad, but she needs her keel replaced, some frames, and some timber, and some planks. And so right now he's trying to figure out if the owner wants to do the project and where he can do the project in Southwest Harbor. The big news probably this week is Peter Buxton is going to put over a Buxton boats over in Sunset, which is part of Stonington. He's going to put over that 32-footer that is based on a Peter Cass design for a couple from down in Port Clyde, and she will be launched this week. Unfortunately, I won't get pictures, and maybe I can slide down to Port Clyde and they'll, you know, run by the dock or whatever. But anyways, that's it for Boat Yard News. You want to go into lobster boat racing?
It's the end of the season now, right?
Yes, and we broke the record.
For the number of boats?
Yep, 183 boats showed up at Winter Harbor.
Whoa, wow, all in one day?
Tell me about it. Well, I was there 2 days, and they did it really smart, and I had been thinking about this, if you could do it online. And I think they used a program that some people didn't have, so that, you know, there's some bugs with it, but I think it works. And then also other fishermen have asked if I can actually sign up at the beginning of the year. They'll just say, we'll just pay you a flat fee for all the races. So we might do that too. But we've got to talk to all of the events to see how they're going to charge and that sort of stuff. Because mostly the charge is $20. And I don't think it's changed in 30 years, as long as I can remember. But Winter Harbor was $50 a boat. But they also were giving away a $50,000 hull to those people who had entered in the race.
Huh.
Although you had to be a commercial boat. But anyways, no, lobster boat racing this year was very good. We almost had 175 more boats racing this year than we did last. The real highlight was the gas-powered boats that came out, one being Black Diamond from Islesboro. He has a great big, I don't know how many, he's well over 1,500 horsepower, but he can't harness all the power. And then the Lynn Marie, which is out of Long Island off of Portland, he's got probably close to that. And they both cruise at about the same, which is between 57 and 60 miles an hour. So that was really the highlight. In Hobswell, it was really evident that those two boats turned people's heads. Of course, the big winner on the year was Jeremy Beals, Maria's Nightmare. Although his daughter stole the show at Long Island off Portland when we raced there, I can't remember the date, 17th. The New York Times made her part of one of their big stories because I think she's a freshman or sophomore in high school, and she's fishing. And this was Wayne Beals. For those that don't know, Wayne was a boat builder down there, but he also fished in the summer. And so she's taken that boat. He's got another boat. And so she's out fishing, and she takes it to the lobster boat races. Well, nobody can catch her. She's pretty quick. She's basically taken over for Heather Thompson that had Gold Digger in Class J. And, in fact, Heather showed up for Winter Harbor the first time we've seen her in a couple of years. But, no, the lobster boat race season was really, really good. The gas boats were great. But Winter Harbor stole the show with that 183 boats. And the racing was really good. We were done in probably 5 hours. But I had five classes that I had to run heats in because I had too many boats on the line if we just ran one race. So we limited it to 10 boats, pretty close to 10 boats a heat or a race. But then we weren't out of there till 6:30 because I didn't get back to the dock in Stonington until probably after 8. And it was pretty dark. And not have a dock at Billings Marine, it was a little challenge, but not bad. So that's about it on my end.
Okay, good. I've had the comments from people listening that sometimes on Boat Talk we use terminology that a lot of people don't understand. And you talked about raising wheels. What are your comments from
lifting strikes, wasn't it?
Lifting wheels, yes.
Yeah. Oh, lifting strikes.
Yeah.
So on the side, you got your spray rails.
Yeah, those are the little.
But if you start putting them, on the bow.
Yep.
Yeah, run from the bow to probably what, a third of the way back?
Maybe halfway, but they stick out from the hull and keep the splash from coming up the side.
Right. Now, lifting rails are underwater. And what they do is they lift the boat up. It's kind of like in the old days. Remember you used to hear them put a shingle on the stern?
On the back end,
Because the boat was doing funny things, so they wanted to either raise or drop the bow. So they, kind of make alterations to the stern. So basically lifting rails will pull the boat out of the water or lift it up a little bit, not a lot, and get her so that she's running better on lines, especially on your down east boat where you want to run mostly on your stern. You don't want a lot of rocker in the boat so the nose isn't high. You want it to kind of run straight on top of the water, like Wild Wild West does, Holland 32s do that. But anyway, so yeah, that's what lifting rails are. So if you see a race boat out of the water and you see rails under the water, that's what they are.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you. For people listening, we'll try to explain some of the terms that we use that may be
text us.
Unusual. So are you going to hang on, John? Well,
I'll hang on.
Okay, yep, in case we get some other calls. I'm going to open up the phone lines for anybody who'd like to call in and talk with us. The number is 207-618-8819. 618-8819. Or you can email us at boattalk@gmail.com. And I want to welcome two guests we have here in the studio today. We have two returning Boat Talk friends. First is Art Payne, who is a sailor, a looter owner, a writer for Maine Boats, Homes,
Artist.
And Harbors. Yeah, you know Art. And we have Steve Callahan also, who is also an author and a sailor. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of boaty things, nothing in particular. But if you have any questions, you can certainly join in too. 618 8819. So I think we'll start with Steve. You are here again. Do you own a boat anymore?
I have a boat project.
A boat project of your own?
Yeah. Well, not of my own design. We bought a everything we do, we either build or rebuild.
Yeah, no, and I mean so somebody's little, not paying you to do this project.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's a we felt like the boat was worth salvaging. So
what kind of boat is it?
It's an 18-foot. It's kind of a frankly, it's a bastardized Farrier trimaran that probably was started by somebody and then picked up, and the main hull is by somebody else. And
a project.
It's boat. A project boat. Yeah. But it's coming along slow but sure.
Huh. So you.
So what have you had to do?
Oh, a lot of structural stuff. They ground. They covered it with glass, but then they ground all the glass off all the edges. So like there were a lot of seam intrusion of water into seams and stuff. So I replaced parts of the deck and reglassed all the edges and all that, and done some paint jobs. And I don't know. We're getting ready to put it back together again at some point. But we're old and slow, as a friend of mine says. We're not very good, but damn if we're not at least slow.
Yeah, might not do good work, but we sure are slow.
Yeah. So, but I started in multi-hull, you know, in multi-hulls in the 60s. I've always been kind of an equal opportunity, you know, boating sadist, I guess, or masochist. So it's kind of come full circle in a way, because this is a little camp cruiser, and that's when I first learned about Mount Desert Island. We had a O'Day Mariner, which is... a Rhodes 19 hull with a little cuddy cabin on it, and we would trailer it up here and sail around Mount Desert Island.
Hmm. Have you actually sailed around Mount Desert Island?
I have sailed around Mount
Desert Island. Gone under the bridge?
Yeah. We did a camp cruising on a beach cat for Cruising World magazine, did a little trip on using parts of the Main Island Trail, which if anybody doesn't know the Main Island Trail, it's a fantastic resource for anybody who's on the water in small boats. And
yeah.
Camp cruised up there.
MTA, MITA dot O-R-G, I believe, is their website. And you're right, that's an excellent trail. And we'll go over to Art. Art, have you been on the Main Island Trail?
Oh, I'm sure I've crossed it once or twice.
Go across it, yeah.
Most of the time I'm in a deeper boat than that. Sometimes you get into pretty skinny water. And most of the boats I drive have got a deeper keel than that.
Yeah. Skinny water for people not leaving.
Very skinny water. Yeah. I mean, it's great for kayaks and stuff like that, but I don't know, sailboats that you can dry out on the flats.
Right, yeah.
Well, I just fell in love with a skinny water boat, as a matter of fact, because I'm still working, just about 80, but I love working on boats, so I work at Jim Elk's Bar and Boat Shop on Mount Desert Island. And last winter, a fella came in the door with a cat boat. I just love cat boats. They're often much higher performance boats than anyone would ever know, and they're comfortable, and they don't really heel much until they go over. But that usually doesn't happen. And the fellow showed up with a boat that I didn't know what it was, and I pretty much know most boats. And it turned out what it was and is called a Handy Cat. And some of them were built at Handy Boat down in Falmouth Foreside, Maine. They were designed by Merle Hallett, who was the guy that made Handy Boat what it is. I've talked to his sons because I'm doing an article for the next issue of Maine Boats, Homes, and Harbors magazine about this particular boat, and found out it was the only boat that Merle Hallett ever designed in his life. And he did an absolutely splendid job. It's a hard chance to change a catboat design. They tend to be pretty much the same thing. But I think he did everything right. For one thing, he didn't spare the weight, and catboats like to have some weight in them. And I think it's a 20-footer. I'm not really sure. But what he wanted to do is he also owned a Marshall Cat Sanderling, which is a larger boat, where you can drop the mast down and the gaff and the boom, hinge it all back, and then just trail the boat down the road. And he wanted to accomplish the same thing on this little handicap. And the owner of the boat wanted to do two or three other things, all of which were pretty easy for us to accomplish. And we had to saw his mast off since it buried down in the bow, Jim and I. And Jim worked on the mast, and I worked on, you know, kind of doing little engineering drawings and a mock-up for a tabernacle that would allow this stuff to all fold back in such a way that one man could single-hand the boat and stick the mast up in the air and after trailering it and go sailing. And didn't it turn out great? It just really, really succeeded. And we had Nautilus do the metalwork off my little mock-up, and they did a perfect job, as they always do, for about a tenth of what we expected it to cost. And I've taken some pictures of it, I've taken some videos of it, and we'll have an article in Maine Boats and Harbors next time.
Okay.
Who has the mold of that? All right.
That mold had, there was four different builders. The last people who had that mold was called Stroudwater Marine, right near the airport in Portland. Don't know much about them, because I try to call everybody that has anything to do with something I write about, but I was unable to get in touch with them. They had built the last of them, and they'd also acted as a broker for these boats. There were about 300 of them built, and I would very highly recommend that boat for sailing in Maine. It's just a marvelous performer. It's not likely to capsize. You can pull it right up on a beach. It's extremely trailerable, especially if you did this little gizmo that we invented.
So a cat boat, to generalize, is a single-masted boat where the mast is way far forward in the boat, and the boat itself is rather wide in proportion to its length, and has a very large sail. It's held up by a gaff, right?
They tend to be almost always gaff-rigged, yeah.
Yeah. And they're very old design. I think they probably go back, you know, 150 years anyway. Real classic boat, the kind you see a lot on the wall, which is one of my descriptions of looters too. Looters are a boat that looks very pretty on the wall. I mean, not the boat itself, but the picture.
You're talking about a half model, or you're talking about a photograph?
I'm talking about a drawing, a nice art painting.
Yeah, well, in addition to working for Jim, occasionally I do sell a painting out of something that comes into the shop. Hasn't happened so far with this cat boat, though.
Yeah, that's like...
When did you design that?
Oh, it's all there in the article, but I got the short-term memory problems, so I can't really answer it. I think it was back in 1983 or 84, a long while ago. They Cape Cod Shipbuilding, I believe, built a whole bunch of them, and then another outfit whose name is equally familiar, but I can't remember, built some more, and then the molds went...
Crosby.
No, it wasn't Crosby. Oh. It started with an N, but I can't remember what it was. And then the molds went up to Merle Hallett at Handy Boat, and they built not quite so many, maybe 20 of them. And every step of the way, they made really small improvements to that boat. And actually, after Jim and I did what we did to the boat, which turned out to be a success, I sailed it and actually made a couple of suggestions. The centerboard is big and heavy, and you just pull it up with a single rope coming out of the top of the centerboard trump. And the fellas brought the boat back to us, and I'm going to try to bury a block down in there. So it's 2-to-1, so the centerboard weighs half as much to pull up out of the trunk. And the boat did go into irons a couple of times. It didn't seem to have enough rudder, and most cat boats don't have but nothing underneath the water. They have more up in the air than they do underneath the water for a rudder, so I'm going to alter that and dip the rudder down a little bit, give it some more surface area. That's going to happen in a couple of months now.
That'll help you not getting in irons by making your turn a little quicker?
The beginning of the turn will be better.
Do
you ever sail with Merle?
I've sailed against him. I think I won the Maine State Sailing Championship twice in my life, and I think he won it about 16 times. I don't know. He was the best, one of the best sailors in the state of Maine that you knew of. There's other ones.
He was fun to sail with.
Oh, well, I bet he was. He was a really knowledgeable guy. He was always right there at the start. on my end, which is the pin end, so he knew how to play that game. And he was just a wonderful guy, had a wonderful family, five kids, I think.
What do you mean by the pin end?
Oh, the leeward end, where you give everyone else backwind if you can get there on the microsecond. Otherwise, you have to go around again. So it's a bit of a game to get there.
Yeah, he did a lot of great ocean racing and stuff. He sailed with some of the best guys around.
Yeah, I think he invented the Monhegan race. I could be wrong on that, but...
We figured he was there when God actually developed Casco Bay. That's why he could sail so well. Yeah. He had such good local knowledge.
Well, I end the article by showing, talk about a multi-talented man. He was a musician. He had himself a little rock band and helped feed his family down in Portland by bringing that into bars when he was young. And late in his life, he took up painting at... You're going to see his paintings if you subscribe to Maine Boats and Harbors magazine, and you won't be disappointed. They are mostly marine paintings, but he also did paintings of his dogs, and they're magnificent. He was just an amazing man.
Yeah, well, we unfortunately lose amazing men along too often. So let's go to Steve, joking back to you. Your boat, is that you and, well, I guess you bought it, really, or was it given to you?
No, we bought it.
But bought it.
It wasn't much money.
A deal, I'm sure.
Yeah, like yeah. It's just sort of a side project, really.
Yeah, somebody's wife was saying, get rid of that boat.
Yeah, that's kind of how I started my, actually, I don't know, I was building boats for a while back in the 60s, the 70s, and... At that time, of course, a lot of people were building their own boats. It was part of the, I don't know, what...
That still happens, yeah.
My friend Jim Brown called the seasteading movement, where there was a back-to-the-land thing. There was also a bunch of people buying or being given, especially wooden boats back in that era. A lot of people were just, like, giving them away. It was before Wooden Boat Magazine and all of that, but a lot of people were trying to build their own boats. A lot of divorces happened in that era. I kind of traveled around and helped people build these things. So this is kind of a throwback to then, like I say, it's almost like a full circle experience, because back in the 60s and the 70s, you know, I was kind of doing a lot of camp cruising and things like that. So after doing, I don't know, 40-plus years of mostly offshore sailing, we feel like we're kind of getting back to our original roots.
Yeah, it is fun to go gunk-holing, as we call it.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Oh, can't beat it in Maine. I've been to a lot of places in the world. I've never seen a better cruising ground than Maine.
Huh. Where else have you been coastal cruising?
Oh, I don't know. A Tonga. We cruised Bermuda one year. We got stuck there for about a month. There was constant gales, and we cruised the archipelago of Bermuda, which was quite interesting.
Around the whole...
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of, you know, little islands and things there. It's actually... I would go there pretty frequently, like a lot of people doing deliveries and stuff like that. We'd end up there fairly
a lot
frequently.
Of shoal water on one side, too.
There is, almost... ran up on North Rock one day, but that was before GPS, and we were doing, you know, everything with sextants, and I hadn't had a sextant sight in about 3 days, and finally got a line of sight, which gives you one line, and it went just on the outsides of North Reef, and I jumped up on deck, and there was the rock right in front of me, not 100 yards ahead, so.
Well, you were pretty good with that machine, weren't you?
Lucky. That was lucky.
Yeah. Practice. I mean, I used to take one with me in the Bahamas, and the Bahamas was a great place to use sun sights because most of the islands stretch north and south. Mm. And what you're trying to find is a reef or an entrance onto the banks. And I got to the point where with the sun at noon, with a plastic, I forget the name of the brand, used them. With that sextant, I could, you know, definitely get within 2.5 miles, which is enough to... Mm. No, which island you go?
Yeah, usually, except if you're in the Pacific. One thing I found, I did a trip, one of my favorite trips was to take a proa, which is a weird boat because it doesn't tack back and forth like a normal boat. It changes ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one main hull and one outrigger. Okay, so little hull.
Let me explain it a little bit further. You got a mast in the middle of this boat, and then there's a line that goes from the top of the mast down to one end of the boat. And rather than turning the boat around, you take that line and take it up to the other end of the boat. Is that?
Well, kind of. I mean, in this case, this is a sort of designed by Russell Brown, Jim Brown's son, and it actually had two jibs. It had one a central mast, like you say, sloop rigged. And we would have one jib in when we would want to turn the boat around and go the opposite direction. We'd actually drop that jib and either roll it up on that end and raise one on the other end, or you could change the jib ends. It sounds very complicated, but everything would happen in its own time, and it wasn't stressful at all. And the boat had such high performance that I compared it to the 28-foot trimaran I was living on, I built and lived on in the 70s. And this is a 36-foot boat, and it had the same size rig. So it was like really easy to handle the sails and all this stuff. But the reason I originally mentioned this is because there were atolls and stuff in the Pacific where if you're 2 miles away, you could be toast because you don't even see them from some of them less than a mile away. And some of the charts, like when we got to the Marquesas, it's interesting that if you look at the datum on the charts, that they're actually based on Captain Cook's original voyages in some islands. Yeah, like you get the GPS out and you go, well, I'm sitting here in this harbor and it's telling me I'm here, but the chart says I'm, you know, like the islands, I should be in the middle of the island, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the program that began this show was story about the wreck of the Jenny Lind, which happened many, many years ago, and it ran up on an uncharted shoal, just like you're talking about. You can't see them, and this was a bigger boat. They couldn't turn in time. That was the end of that story. Well, no, it wasn't the end of the story, but it was the end of the boat.
Yeah.
Oh, so let's talk a little bit about Luders Racing. Luders Racing happens in what, Northeast Harbor?
In the Great Harbor off Northeast. We've had a pretty good fleet of Luders. As a matter of fact, this summer, we had our first nationals, or internationals we called it, in 19 years, I think it was. And it was a huge success. The fellow, Nick Johnson, who is the general manager of the fleet, what they call the Northeast Harbor Fleet, which is the yacht club in Northeast Harbor, had done some racing in a funny little class down in Charleston, I've forgotten, the Something Island something, and had so much fun, turned into a big party, and they called it the Worlds, even though there were no boats any more than 15 miles away, but they called it the Worlds anyway. Someone in the world might build one and bring it. Anyway, this fellow, Nick, he was the spark plug behind the idea of finally having another national championship for the Luders class. And he did all the work and all the promotion and named a date. I've forgotten what the date was. But we had four entrants from people from away. The rest of the fleet was from Northeast Harbor, where we have a pretty good-sized fleet. And it was a heck of a good show, and everyone went away really, really happy, having had a great time. So I think that we'll pick it up now and probably be doing it for, who knows, forevermore.
Do you have any viewers on the shore watching the race?
Well, I was in a boat watching it. I mean, it's a little bit far out to see, to actually watch from shore. Although I've climbed Flying Mountain, and I think from Flying Mountain, which is not a hard climb, you'd be looking right down on the place where we first sailed, which was Somes Sound on the first day. However, it was so thick a fog, the boats couldn't even see each other or see the marks, so there was little chance someone from the top of Flying Mountain might have watched the action. The next day was a beautiful, crystal clear, windy day. We had five races, and they were as good racing as you could ever have anywhere. It was really a marvelous time.
So the Luders are a relatively deep keel boat for its length. Did you ever have any go over when they're racing?
No.
Pushing it that hard.
We hit a rock or two.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's a narrow boat, so when you're heeled way over, and it's got a combing, although we tend to cut the combings down a little bit, but you might ship a little water in a puff, but you're not going to sink from that.
Why do you cut the combing down? Combing is the boards that are on the side of the cockpit that sort of keeps the cockpit separated from the deck, the side decks. But why would you cut it down?
Because your butox is sitting on that side deck. And it's very uncomfortable,
comfort,
particularly for the aged butox.
Yeah.
So if you're hiking hard out there, you don't want that cutting up into you. Just for that reason, though.
Or you could make them wider, too. The top.
Well, we at Jim's shop, we often do this job, and we basically add some to the bottom or make whole new combing so that aesthetically they look pretty much the same, but they're just lower down vis-a-vis the side deck. That's a specialty we have at Jim Elk's Spar and Boat Shop, is working on Lutezes and IODs to make them faster. I'm the rigging guy, so I'm putting all kinds of little whiz-bangs in there to make the sail shape better or get the spinnaker up and down easier. We put in spinnaker launching tubes where you can suck the spinnaker down inside the boat. That kind of fun.
So, Luders, he was an architect, right? Naval architect, designer.
Yeah.
I've heard that he designed that boat just because, like I was saying earlier, to look good on the wall. It looks up when you see a drawing of a Luders. He intentionally made it to look good.
Alan, that makes a great story. Mm.
And you know what? If that's a true story, it he did a good job.
I'm not believing it. This is fake news here, right on WEIU, where you can trust.
Well, what isn't fake news, though, is the Luders has got to be one of the most pretty boats
it is
ever
gorgeous,
created.
It's a gorgeous boat. Yeah, no question about that.
Yeah. And they're making fiberglass ones now, too, right?
Well, they're not making them anymore, but there are still boats around, and people keep bringing them into our fleet. Wooden ones and fiberglass ones. My boat is a fiberglass one, but we have almost half the fleet consists of wooden ones, and they were hot molded. They were built by the Luders Corporation, which was hired by the government at the end of World War II to create life rafts and emergency drop to the swimming aviator, whatever they call them, rescue vessels. And they were put together with resource and oil glue and a whole lot of pressure and heated up in an autoclave. And then the war was suddenly over, and the Luders Corporation lost all of those lucrative government contracts. But a lot of people came back wanting to own boats. And zippity-doo-dah, he decided to design a whole bunch of beautiful hot-molded boats. So the Luders has 5 1/8-inch layers of mahogany.
Five?
Just five, eighths.
That's pretty thick hull when you.
Well, it is, but there's no ribs.
Oh, yeah.
It's all she wrote. Yeah. And Jim and I will take the keels off them, tip them upside down, take out any rotten veneers. We call them veneers, although they're thicker than a veneer, and put them right back in good shape. And they're totally competitive. There's at least one boat that's right up at the top of the fleet. That's one of the hot molded boats, but when we repair them, it's cold molding. We don't require heat. We vacuum bag to produce pressure, but epoxy glue will glue it all together soundly.
Those old, when we first bought a property up here in the mid 70s, there was a hot molded powerboat that was kind of discarded in the woods, and it was already been there for God knows probably at least a decade. That there are panels of that boat. Everything else is rotted away, but there are pieces of panels of that boat that are still good, and it's been abandoned now for, over 50 years. Hmm. So that's a good way to build a boat.
Oh, it is.
Expensive, but...
Yeah, yeah. Well, in a way, everything comes around again. Now we're cooking boats again now because we've got resins that are thin and will go into the cloth really well, but they need to be post-cured in order to make the resin go off stiff.
So everything in boat building is becoming more chemically oriented, I guess we'll call it. And we're sort of separating into two schools of boat building. There's the high-tech chemical boat building, and there's the people like Eric Dow or who other boat builders, I'm saying, coming up with no names around. Suffering from old age also.
Are we talking plank on frame?
Yeah.
Well, Peter Cass.
Peter Cass there. Thank you. Yeah.
Richard Stanley.
Richard Stanley, right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So.
Peter Buxton.
Yep.
Yeah, speaking of which, did Dougie Dodge make it to Winter Harbor?
No.
Oh, that thing's going to take him forever.
He's been in my shop. I don't know. He's been in my shop most of the last month.
This is your shop in Eastport.
No, in Jonesport.
Jonesport, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Alonzo, Alonzo's running it. Alonzo Alley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's been in there working on engines, but I don't think he's got any further on his boat, which is sad because he's got a nice boat. It would go well, and he just needs to do a few things. I think he's trying to put the bigger motor in it already.
Well, he's got the Oldsmobile that he wants to run in that boat. He said the engine's pretty much done. He was looking for some special kind of manifold to put on it. And I'm hoping he'll put the exhaust on the way he did before when he had the other engine, where it stuck straight up out of the cockpit, and it looked like something out of an art museum. It was the craziest looking thing I ever saw.
Straight up out of the cockpit.
Well, it came out of both sides of the engine in a Y, and then it married to a central, cause this is all extremely dry exhaust and extremely, extremely loud exhaust.
Yeah, and extremely hot, too.
Oh, yeah, it's going to belch fire, like a spit fire.
Boy, it will fall back against that. So it's all stainless exhaust, too?
Well, it was the last time, but you never know with Dougie. It's whatever's lying around.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can sympathize with that. So I'm kind of running out of things to talk about. I have one little funky thing here in front of me that I discovered from on the internet, that all these sails that are on sailboats nowadays are all made with super synthetic synthetic plastic fiber sails.
Carbon, mylar, all that stuff.
Yeah. This little thing that I found says that now there's a company that is upcycling plastic fibers from sails and making them into chemicals such as vanillin. Vanillin is a... it's artificial vanilla is what it is. It's a food.
You're eating the sails?
Yeah, from squeezing it out.
The ultimate recycling.
Yeah. That seems pretty bizarre reach to go from sails to vanilla. But there's a company that's doing it. You can get more information from the Industrial Biotechnology Innovation Center. There's a website for that.
Well, the sails, there's a brand name of sails called CFAST, and they recycle them into something called PFAST. PFAS?
PFAS, yeah. And then they spread it around everybody's garden.
Does anybody have an opinion on watching the America's Cup?
Oh, God.
I have lots of opinions about the America's Cup. First of all, fascinating. Fascinating in many respects, certainly different than any America's Cups in prior eras.
Back in the olden days.
And thirdly, I'd like to just point out that the America's Cup did not invent sailing hydrofoils, far from it. In fact, J.G. Baker had a sailing foil back in the 50s, and foil technology goes way, way back. But the way that they've refined it is pretty spectacular, considering the fact that sometimes they're sailing over three times wind speed, which I thought was impossible.
I worry about those daggers or whatever you call the
foils.
The lifting foils. Yeah, the lifting foils.
I say that because a rudder is a foil, a keel is a foil, and all of that.
So. Yeah, but what they do to critters in the water when they go slicing through there, chopped jellyfish at least, but turtles, other surface fish are...
I think that if they hit a turtle with one of those foils, the foil's probably pretty done. if you know it. I mean, these are really fragile foils. They're designed right on the edge. Yeah. They have been hitting stuff in the water, but mostly it's like little bits of weed, and even that is difficult for them to keep control of the boat. They get a little piece of weed on the rudder doing 40 knots.
Yeah.
It's a lot of load.
There was a foiling ferry in Japan that hit a whale a few years back.
Yeah.
That was not a good thing. Several people were injured, and I never got a report on the whale, but I don't think he probably did very well either.
Yeah.
So we're rolling up to the end of the Extra Large Soul Show. Got only about 3 or 4 minutes left, and no phone calls, 618-8819, if you'd like to try to squeeze something in. But I'd like to thank both Art Payne and Steve Callahan for coming in today. And I will just throw it out to you if there's anything else that I haven't talked about that you'd like to bring up, either of you.
I guess I'd like to mention the passing of Walter Greene at age 80. Walter goes way back. I don't know if anybody, even multi-hullers, know him from that side of things, but he goes way back. He worked with Ted Hood on Robbins. He did Transatlantic Race in Admiral's Cup and all that stuff. But then he got into multi-hulls in the 70s. He did a bunch of All-Stars. He and his wife, Joan, won the Round Britain race in a 38-footer he created that then got sold to a great sailor, Mike Birch, who sailed it and won the first Route to Rum by, I think it was 98 seconds, the first so-called photo finish in a transatlantic race. Walter is a giant in the field, and a great guy to be around, and he and his wife Joan just created an incredible thing called Green Marine that can be seen from Route 1 or across from the Muddy Rudder. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so a shout-out to Walter, and I hope he's in a good place.
Yeah.
All right. You used to work at Alan Vitesse, correct?
Well, I had him do some work for me when I was designing boats. He built some molds, and he built the molds for the infamously failure two-bit squatter tonner that I came up with.
Well, that was the first place that Walter worked.
Oh, was it really? Well, he was a wonderful guy.
Yeah. Well, that about wraps up Boat Talk for this week. Thanks to Pepin down in the engine room for keeping things going. And second Tuesday of next month will be the next Boat Talk at 4 to 5.